Okay, so this week's parsha is Parshat Shmini. Shmini is one of those parshiot that we often skip. I don't mean we skip it, we don't read it. We don't have shiur on it all the time because of its normal proximity to Pesach. And being a leap year, we get to learn parshiot that sometimes we don't get to learn. So there's two different, you know, there's two choices over here. One is we can talk about Nadav and Avihu, and the other we can talk about all the kosher and non-kosher animals. Okay, so that was clear. Incidentally, this is actually, you can check this out if you're a masochist. You can check this out tomorrow. The Jerusalem Zoo is always filled in Parshat Shmini, Erev Shabbos. All of these religious fellows are, you know, doing their mitzvah, taking their kids to the zoo that day and pointing, this is the kosher, not kosher. So they you can check this. You can do a statistical analysis. You can go the next 6 weeks to the zoo, and you can see that this Friday is actually going to be the busiest day, which actually is probably a real good reason not to go to the zoo tomorrow, but that's already, it's a good reason to go because more pictures you could take. I know, Stu. Did you get as excited as a dentist when you take people's x-rays? Okay, here it comes. I'm going to take a great picture now. I guess not. Okay. So the problem that we have with Nadav and Avihu is they die. I mean, that's one problem. The second problem is that the Torah does not directly make a value judgment in terms of telling us certain things that, let's, for example, say, many of the commentators are going to tell you that they sinned, and then we're going to have this whole fight about what sin they had. So you can go through all of the commentaries, and it's going to be, you know, it's wonderful to find how many different things these people were guilty of. I mean, at some point you start to question, why in the world didn't God kill them long before, considering how bad they were? On the other hand, when you actually look in the text of the Torah, it doesn't really say that. I mean, you can read it. I mean, and that's part of what I want to do today, is to consider the various approaches to what they did wrong, or maybe not, and what the Chumash actually says. So if we'll skip along to page 2, source number 6, we have over here Vayikra Rabba. So to a very great extent, we don't have to go to the medieval commentaries, because we already have it in Midrash Rabbah, the various opinions, and what they're doing is they're just picking up the ones which they like the most. Rabbi Mani Deshav, Rabbi Shua Desichnan, Rabbi Yochanan, B'Shem, Rabbi Levi Amru. So here's the first approach. B'Shvil Arba Devarim Metu B'nei Aharon. Okay, they're guilty of four different things. What are they? Uvekulon Ktiv B'Hemita. And all of these things, if you read the Chumash, it will talk about death. Al Shehayu Shatuye Yayin. The first one is because they were drunk. Uktuv Be'Mita. And it talks about death and such a thing. Now, before we actually look at how it quotes it, if you have the dexterity to, you know, keep your eye on that, and just to look on top of, on the same page, which is source number 5, very top of the page, Vayomer Moshe, sorry, not Moshe, we don't want Moshe, Pasuk Chet, Vayedaber Hashem al Aaron Lamar. Right away, we notice that there's something is amiss. Because normally it would be Vayomer Hashem, Vayedaber Hashem, El Moshe, or El Moshe Ve'Aaron. So this is going to be one of the times that God speaks to Aaron exclusively. Vayedaber Hashem al Aaron Lamar, Yayin V'Shecher Altesht, Ata'u V'Necha, Itach B'Vochem al Omoed. You and your sons do not drink when you come into the Omoed, V'lo Tamutu, and don't die. Chukot Olam L'Dorotechem, this is a decree forever. Now you read this, and just in case you're wondering, Pasuk Chet comes right after Pasuk Zayin. What did Pasuk Zayin say? Well, which comes after Pasuk Vav. This is not a big chiddush, but you should just realize this. This is right after the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. And here Aaron was told, no, you cannot leave the Mishkan. So here, in the sensibility of those various commentaries who were just now cited, all of them say the same thing. Again, there's going to be four reasons, and here the first reason is quite obvious. Immediately after the deaths of Nadav and Avihu, God speaks specifically to Aaron, not to Moshe and Aaron, not to Moshe, to Aaron, and he says, listen, don't enter into the Mishkan when you're drunk and die, because you will die. Rather, you know, avoid this. Now, this is going to be really obvious, right? If this comes immediately after, the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. And this says why death takes place. So you just now had that God provided the reason that they died. They died because they entered into the Mishkan when they were drunk. I'm saying, there you go, it's black and white. Or is it? I mean, you always run a risk when you make a an argument which is too strong. How about trying something else based upon Mishle and based upon a Gemara? If you want to know which Gemara, it's Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Ayin. You'll remember it now, whether you like it or not, because Daf Ayin and Gematria. Okay, you're not going to remember this. Ayin and Gematria is 70. What else is 70? Yayin. Yud and Nun is 70. So where does the Gemara talk about wine? In the Gemara Sanhedrin and Daf Ayin. There you go. As a matter of fact, it says on that page, Mishenichnas Yayin Yotzei Sod. When you drink, things come out. Yes, I heard about your poem. So wine sod in Gematria is 70, which is what the Gemara is saying. So the widow and brothers Ram, who decided to publish the Gemara and put that Gemara on that page, I think that they had a good day. Now, one of the things it says on that page when it talks about wine is it quotes a pasuk in Mishle, and it says that wine, and the Gemara says it's black and white. I'm going to prefer the Gemara's formulation, which is based on Mishle. It says that God created wine in order to give comfort to mourners. That if somebody is mourning, somebody's distressed, I mean, the same way that perhaps in our generation people will be taking a Valium, what the Gemara says is God created wine in order for people who are mourning, people who are distressed, people who are difficult, to take the edge off, that they could have some kind of comfort. Now, just keep that Gemara in mind right now, and now let's read this pasuk. Aaron just now lost two sons. But what is Aaron told? You can't mourn. You have to stay on duty. That's the pasuk before. You have to stay and do what you do. And then the Torah comes and says, you know what? A matter of fact, you have to stay on duty. There's no drinking wine for you, which means something which a normal mourner would be able to do. And maybe Aaron needs it even more because he has to keep on going. So the only reason I just now did this, I know it was terrible what I just now did, because I just try to show you that even though when you read the Midrash, it was black and white. You know, you read the Chumash, it's black and white. The reason they died is, of course, they were drunk, and that's why God tells Aaron, don't drink. So I just now gave you an alternative narrative of why God said not to drink at that moment, because he's a mourner, and normally a mourner would be able to drink, and maybe even that's why God created grapes, which is quite interesting. And now he's told, no, you are not able to mourn like other mourners could, and therefore do not take this. When you serve in the Mishkan, you need a clear head, and this has nothing to do with Nadav and Avihu. This has to do with Aaron and sons moving forward. So let's continue in the Medrash, which is why this is a Medrash and not actually what the Chumash said. Back in, continue in source number 6. Once again, Bishvil Arba Devarim Meitu Bnei Aaron V'kulan K'tiv V'hem Mita Al Shahayu Shetuya Yain K'tiv Bo Mita Shenema Yain V'Shechar Al Tesh V'Ayidei Shayu Mechusarei Begadim. Second reason is they went into serve, they were not wearing the right clothing. So it all comes down to clothing. Yes, I think a lot of the people in this room understand that. It always comes down to the proper clothing. And over here, we had no hint of this in the narrative of the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. We saw nothing about this. Rather, they entered into the Mishkan. What was wrong? They went in. They wore the right clothing. And in fact, it says by clothing, Tiv Bomita Shenemar. Now, just realize, of course, the pasuk over here is not in Vayikra, not Perek Ted, not Perek Yud. It took us all the way back to Shemot Kaf Chet, speaking about how a Kohen or Kohen Gadol would dress. Vahaya al Aaron l'sharet, and this is what Aaron needs when he goes in. Vayideish nichnasu below rechitzat yadayim v'raglayim. And now it goes back to another place in Shemot, which tells us how the Kohanim need to prepare to serve, and they need to wash their hands and their legs properly. Shenema rechatzu yadayim v'raglayim v'lo yamutu. Now, I hope you realized, even though you thought the first argument was really good till I gave you an alternative possibility, you realize that these other reasons which are being given are wonderful reasons, except you can't possibly prove them. I mean, there's just no evidence whatsoever. The only evidence that you have is it says that you're going to die if you do this, and they died, so therefore that must be what they did. And I hope you all realize that that was not necessarily the strongest argument, and you're also making an assumption. And just one more moment, and this assumption is one that we really need to be very careful about. And it was already debated between Rabbi Akiva and between a Roman dignitary. And that is there a correlation between pain and between sin? So the Roman dignitary says to Rabbi Akiva that if somebody is poor, for example, and suffering, if you help this person, then you will have to face God's judgment because God declared that this person should be poor. So therefore, we should therefore decide that if God declared somebody to be poor, the worst thing we can possibly do is to give them money, give them help, do anything for them because God declared that they should be in this situation. Does that ring true to any of you in terms of Jewish values? So you realize that Rabbi Akiva is going to come back, and he actually gives him an example. The example is Mashal Lamad Davar Domeh. He says it's as if a king declared that some sinning subject should be thrown into prison, and he's thrown into prison, and then some other subject goes and breaks into the prison and starts giving him things and helping things, smuggles things into the prison. Wouldn't the king be upset with this person? And Rabbi Akiva says Mashal Lamad Davar Domeh. And now listen to the subtlety. He says, imagine if a king got upset not with one of his servants. If a king got one of his sons, and he puts his son in prison, and one of his other sons goes in and says, listen, my brother's in prison, I need to help my brother, wouldn't the king be happy that the brothers are helping one another? And Rabbi Akiva's response is, and quite the opposite, because we give tzedakah, because we help those that are poor, we will be rewarded with the world to come. Now, again, but just notice what's behind all of this. If we determined that there is some kind of a correlation between pain and suffering and death, that means that all of these people, anybody who ever died, we should consider to be a terrible sinner. Anybody who's suffering, we should consider them to be a terrible sinner. Anybody who's poor, we should consider them to be terrible sinners, because all of this is God's decree. But it's just not true. It's just not true. In Judaism, we never make that value judgment. We never make that assumption. We never say that if something happened to somebody, I know why this. Yes, I know there are rabbis that make a career out of this, but we don't like those rabbis. And you can tell them this, by the way. We don't make those assumptions. We don't say that you can point a finger and say, well, I know. It's true the Gemara says that if you personally go through something, and the Gemara is actually quite extreme. If you put your hand in your pocket and you're going for 3 coins, you only pull out 2 coins, you have to go through all the pain and the suffering and the angst and put your hand in the pocket a second time to take out that other coin, you should then be mefashvesh b'ma'asav, start thinking, what in my life has happened that has brought me to such pain and suffering? Because the world should be perfect and God is perfect. My life isn't perfect, so therefore what went wrong? But that's not something that somebody else does for you. That's something else that somebody does for themselves. Okay, how can I make my life better? How can I improve myself? Which, by the way, I hope you all realize that every person who does that, the conclusions they're going to draw will always be subjective. They're always going to say, okay, that area, that's what I need to work on, because that's, of course, where they're coming from. And this other person coming from their own subjective perspective has absolutely no idea what's really going on in this person's life and is not in a position to make that kind of determination. So I'm just going to say it one more time. To say over here that the sons of Nadav and Avihu died because they did this, they did this, they did this, so you're making a very big assumption, and that assumption is that their deaths are related to some kind of sin. Now, is that necessarily pshat? So I'll pause with that question. I've made you suffer long enough, and you have to ask what's going on in your life that I didn't answer your question yet. Go ahead. Okay, so they should have heard the various training. Part of the background of all of this is something we're not going to get into today, and that is trying to determine what it is they did wrong, which means, did they go into the inner chamber or they did something in an outer chamber? Where did they do this when they sinned? That's not as simple to answer as I would like it to be, which means, were they behaving like a Kohen Gadol when they did this? Which, by the way, would absolutely be fascinating if they did. Because if they are acting like Kohen Gadol, which incidentally is the background of this statement over here, is of course, then they didn't have the proper clothing, the proper things, but they're acting as the Kohen Gadol. Their intuition, if we're going to say, led them to bring this Ketoret. So was that a right intuition or a wrong intuition? So for example, in a couple weeks from now, we'll get to, yes, Tzri and Metzora together this year or not? They should be separate. I don't know. They should be separate. So when you get to Parashat Achrei Mot, then we have the whole service of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. One of the things the Kohen Gadol is going to be told to do is to take the Ketoret and go into the Holy of Holies. So did they understand the avoda of the Kohen Gadol in terms of bringing the Ketoret, even though they weren't commanded to do it? Was their intuition actually right? Does what happens in Achrei Mot echo what they did, and that's really interesting if they're right. So let's hold off on that for a second, because let's go back to what they did. So let's go back to what they did wrong, because there was one more opinion over here, and that was continuing in source number 6. It says, "Ayidei shaloyu lehem banim," because they had no children. "Uktiv bomit," and there it also speaks about death in such a situation. "Hadidichtiv," that says, "Vayomad nadav aviyu," right, and therefore it says that they died. And this is giving a list of people. If they had no children, and one of the things we'll learn the next day, Amar Chanin, Amar Ayidei Shaloha Yelem Nashim, because they did not have wives. Now, that would be a problem specifically for a Kohen Gadol. So if you're going to act as a Kohen Gadol, you need to have all of the qualifications of a Kohen Gadol, and because they were not married. Continuing along that line of not being married, Reb Levi Amar, by the way, in case you're wondering, how do we get more than four? It just said that that opinion says there are four, but now we're finding there's a lot more opinions. And I know that there are a lot of people to do what I'm doing right now. They go searching in all the different commentaries and saying, what did Rashi say? What did Ibn Ezra say? What did the Sforno say? Look how easy this is. You just have to open up Midrash Rabbah, and it gives you a whole list of the various sins. Reb Levi Amar, shachatzim hayu. They were arrogant. Harbein nashim hayu yoshivot agunot, mamtinot lahem. Really, it's interesting the word agunot is used, because agunot in its most natural form would be by a woman, not the way that you think. It's by a woman who doesn't know what happened to her husband. That would be an agunah, does not know her husband is missing. It's used today by somebody whose husband refuses to give a get. But look at the word agunot over here, chained woman. There were a lot of single women. Here you have addressing the shidduch crisis and saying there were a lot of women waiting around, mamtinot lahem, waiting around for these young men. Maha yomrim, what did they say? Achi Avinu Melech, Moshe Rabbeinu is a king. Achi Menu Nasi, and our mother's brother, Nachshon, he's the president of his tribe, the head of the tribe. Avinu Kohen Gadol, our father's Kohen Gadol. Va'anu, Shnei Skanekuna, we're second in command, the two of us. Ezu Yisho Genet Lanu, what woman is good enough for us? Okay, so at least one person is laughing over here, and she's probably going to be using this in various conversations over the next couple of months. But this is really interesting. It's saying that they felt there was nobody good enough for them. There's nobody good enough for them. How are they supposed to get married if there's nobody good enough for them? And you know, the terrible thing about me reading this midrash is now certain people hate Nadav and Avihu. They didn't do anything wrong. Just realize this is the midrash saying what they said. This, just like the thing about them not wearing the clothing wasn't actually written, them insulting single Jewish women throughout the generations, because that's how it's going to be taken, is not actually what it says over here. But once again, do you realize how hard the Midrash is working to try to find it, why they are such people that should have died? And we can continue. There's a couple of lines down, or six lines down, we have even a better one, which now you really will dislike them. And this is also mentioned in the Gemara. Some of these, by the way, are in the Gemara, but I just like the way that they're all here in one place. It says, Melamed Shehayu, right under the word Tehillim, which is in bold, Melamed Shehayu Moshe v'Aaron Holchim, Moshe and Aaron were leading the people, Tchila. So it's taking Moshe and Aaron as the leader and turning it into a visual that they're marching, they're walking, and Moshe and Aaron are in front. V'Nadav Aviyu Mahalchen Achareim, and Nadav Aviyu are right after them. V'Kol Yisrael Achareim, and everybody else and the Jewish people are behind them. So here you have the real leaders, and then you have the, if you want, the leaders in training or whatever their position is. V'Omrim, and they say, Matay Shnei Zekenim Halalu Meitim, V'Anu Nogim Sroar Alatzibur. When will these old guys drop already? And that we can then take over and lead the people. I'm sorry for my language, but I'm just giving you a proper translation of what the Midrash is trying to say. Only machloket is, Rav Yudin b'shem Rabbeivu omer b'fihem amru zeh lezeh. They actually said it. Rav Pinchas amer b'libim hirharu. Each one thought it. Okay? So, how do they know any of these things? Okay. Shame on them. Okay. Okay, I've done too good of a job today, and we've built... So that's my point. When you start going through all the things that they've done, so look what we've turned them into. And all of this is because we need to find what it is that they did bad. Later on, there's another opinion, Va'od min Hada. and this is a couple lines down in Shmot Kaf Dalad Yud Aleph, and this is bolded. Elatzile b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado. He did not lash out against the noble ones from Israel. Amar of Pinchas b'kancho ro'uyin lehashlachat yad. They were deserving to be struck. We'll look at the context b'li neder soon. So it says, "Vayechazu Elokim." They looked at God. Malamid shezonu neyem in Ashchina. They actually looked at the Shchina. Vayechazu at Elokim ke adam shemabit bechaveru mitoch machalu mishteh. They ate and they drank. This is all in Shemot Kaf Dalet. This is all by Matan Torah that they were making a party out of it. Vizonu neyem in Ashchina, and it goes on to say, look at the difference. Moshe, when he was by the burning bush, hid his face. That's a couple lines later. But they went and they were enjoying the Shekhinah in front of them. So there certainly is a common denominator. There certainly is a common denominator. At the very end, Elamin Lamid Shahaya Koshelehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'shash Shebineim Shel Tzadikim Meitim B'chayehim. Nonetheless, God had such a difficult time because Aaron is so righteous and Aaron lost his children, and look how terrible this is. So again, this is not every opinion which was ever stated, but you got a whole bunch of them over here, and you did get a flavor of how the Gemara thinks what they did, the Midrash thinks that what they did is so bad, is so terrible. I do want to look for a moment. Look at source 13. This is the Shla HaKadosh. We're not going to read the whole thing right now, but I do want 13, but I want to read two-thirds down where it's bolded. Ki heim lo metu machmat chet. They did not sin. They did not die due to any sin. Kimuvan bipashtan shel dvarim. As is clear from the pshat in the Chumash. Rak adarabba, quite the opposite. Nichnasu b'hasaga gdola mufla u'nishara nishmatam dvoka lamala. They went in the service of God, and that then led to this situation. But they say, like, what are you talking about? I do need to point something out. We have the description of their deaths here, which we have not read yet. And then we have the retrospective every other time in Chumash, which speaks about them. And there are a bunch of times. Whenever it says the other times, it never says they died because of a particular sin. It always says they died lifnei Hashem. They died in front of God. And I do want to now read the description of what it says that happened in source number one. V'ichu b'nei Aharon Nadav Avihu ish machtato. Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron, took the stick, as it were, the v'yitnu b'hem esh, and they placed fire in it. V'yisimu l'ktoret, and they placed on this the ktoret. V'yakrivu l'fnei Hashem, and they brought it in front of God. Notice that's our first l'fnei Hashem. We will have more. Eish zara. Now the word eish zara is a phrase we don't like, and it reminds a lot of us of avodah zara. Eish zara asher lo tziva otam. They brought a strange fire or an alien fire which they were not commanded. Vateitze eish milifnei Hashem, and that notice a fire comes out milifnei Hashem. Vatochal otam, and it swallowed them. Vayamutu lifnei Hashem, and they died in front of God. So that's what it says. Now, one big problem in everything else that I read till now is Moshe Rabbeinu in source number 3. Vayomer Moshe el Aaron, Hu asher diber Hashem lemar, bikrovai ekadesh. That is what God was referring to when he said that through those who are close to me, I will be sanctified. Upnei kol ha'amei kaved, and in terms of all the people, they will be held on a very high level. Vayadom Aaron, and Aaron was silent. Now, the one thing I would say about Moshe Rabbeinu is he's not the kind of person who we generally expect him to be, the sweet-talking, bends-the-truth, Moshe Emet, Vitorato Emet. Moshe's a man of truth. Moshe's not just giving Aaron a line over here. Rashi makes this even worse. I don't recall if I have the Rashi here, do we? So let me read to you the Rashi. Heichan diber. So he goes, he refers back to Perek Kaf Tet Pasuk Mem Gimel in Shmot. And then he says, Omer Lamosh LaAaron, Aaron Achi, Aaron my brother, Yadua Hayiti, I've always known. Okay, so this is scary right now. Shid Kadesh HaBayit B'miyu Adav, that in order for this house, the Mishkan, to be sanctified, it will happen through those who are special, B'miyodov Shomakom, to those who are close to God. It's a very, very interesting talking about the Mishkan, which is a place that the Shechina will be. It refers to God as Hamakom, right? That's interesting. Vayiti Savor, and Moshe says that I had figured along the way, Obi Obicha. I figured that it was either me or you. I'm going to put one word into Rashi. Rashi is saying, as far as I can tell, that he knew that on the day that they consecrate the Mishkan, that either Moshe or Aaron were going to die. And you read this and you say, Achshav, and now I see, Roani, Shehem Gdolim Imeni Mumcha, that they're greater than either one of us. So it's interesting. Rashi didn't buy into everything else that we just now saw, or even better, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't buy into all of that. Moshe, and one of the other reasons which is given sometimes is that they didn't ask Moshe what to do. They just went in on their own. Moshe's there. You ask Moshe what to do. And over here, Moshe is saying that, you know, they are greater than we are, and this is something which I always knew would happen. Now, where did that come from, and what's the idea behind it? So I do want to make a suggestion. In the beginning of Perek Tet, which is source number 2, Vayhi b'yom ha-shemini kara Moshe la'Aaron u'levanav. By the way, did you notice that? That it was Aaron u'vanav from the very beginning over here on this day? Not just Aaron, his children are there as well. U'lezeknei Yisrael, to the elders. V'yom al-Aaron, he says to Aaron, and here you will all channel your inner exegete, and you will see how easy this is. V'yom al-Aaron, kach lecha egel ben bakar lechatat. And you shall bring an eagle as a sin offering. Can anybody guess why in the world, of any animal that has ever existed in God's planet, why the eagle was chosen as a sin offering? Okay, I guess you can figure that out. Ve'ayil le'ola. And you should also use a ram as a burnt offering. So that's slightly more difficult, but it's easy. And where do we see an ayil as a burnt offering? Akedat Yitzchak, stop. Akedat Yitzchak, the ram as a burnt offering. So I hope you realize how interesting that is. Because first of all, there's a direct parallel. What's the direct parallel? Well, where does that take place? That takes place on what we believe to be the Har HaBayit. Avram is commanded to build a Mizbeach. This, therefore, is the consecration of the Beit HaMikdash. Today, here, Yom HaShmini, is the consecration of the Mishkan. When Avraham consecrates the Mishkan, or the Beit HaMikdash, which he may or may not realize that that's what's really going on, but it's okay, because I realize it, so that's good enough for us today. God tells him, build him, right? You're going to make an offering. So he builds a Mizbeach, and he says, take your son, your only son, the son that you love, and you're going to put him on top. And he puts his son that he loves on top. And then the Malach comes and says, no, just kidding. You know, take him down. And then he sees the aisle, and he then offers the aisle instead. So what message do we get all from this whole thing? That in order for... Do you remember the Ramban, our favorite Ramban in Vayikra? The whole idea of the korbanot in terms of the transference that takes place, that you should see the animal as being you, and therefore the blood is being spilled, and you should have died, and therefore the animal's doing it, and all that's a beautiful interpretation. Do you realize that this is much better than the Ramban? You have a visual of the exact same message. Take your son, put him on the altar, because your son is going to die, but then God says, just kidding. Take him off, or the Malach says, take him off, and now the animal can be put in the place. Which means for the Mishkan to work, for the Beit HaMikdash to work, for the Mizbeach to work, you need to understand that that transference or that relationship takes place. A person is on the altar but gets saved from the altar. He comes down from the altar. Now you realize, of course, yes, that what just now happened on this day is the exact opposite took place. that all these animals are being prepared and the animals are going to go, and then, oh, just kidding, I'm taking Nadav and Avihu instead. Now, you didn't see that coming, did you? But it's the same relationship. It's the same relationship. And again, that's what's scary about Rashi, is that Moshe is saying, and I knew that that's part of this, I don't know what you call it. It's part of the calculus, if you will. It's part of the whole dynamic. It's part of how this works. And therefore, there's something that, what can I do? It's Rashi. But it's not just Rashi. It's Rashi telling you what the Pasuk is saying over here. What are you going to do with the Pasuk? Again, I'll say it again. Vayom Moshe Aaron, Hu Asher Diber Hashem Limor B'Korvaya Kadesh. And it's so interesting, B'Korvaya, those who are close to me, the word Korban is there. Those who are close to me are going to be coming Korbanot. Those who are close to me are going to be the ones who are going to be offered. I mean, you read these words and you say, what in the world just now happened? Vayidom Aaron. Aaron is silent. Aaron says, okay. Aaron accepts this. Which means that we're not, again, and in they're greater than us, which means with all these Midrashim telling you how bad they were, and there was no one good enough for them, and they didn't want to get married, and when is Moshe and Aaron going to die? By the way, that's also interesting, because they may be, I would want to read that same Midrash differently now. They're walking and saying, you know, oh my God, when we do the Mishkan, either Moshe or Aaron are going to die, and we're going to have to take over afterwards, because they understand this exact same thing. And I know that's not what it said, and I'm reading it a little different, but now you have three of them walking up and saying, or maybe all four of them walking and saying, well, the day we make the Mishkan, someone's going to die, and Moshe thinking it's Aaron, and maybe Aaron thinking it's Moshe, and now, lo and behold, it's Nadav and Avihu. So yes, I just now gave a completely different read of what just now happened, but I hope you appreciate that the one I'm using, and you can take your choice over here, is Moshe Rabbeinu, or Moshe Rabbeinu through the prism of Rashi, and that's pretty good in terms of... Let me say it differently. In order for people to realize the severity of the Mishkan, and I'll ask you a different question, okay? This is going to be along the way in the next, I don't know, 20 minutes that'll take me to answer you. You're going to assume I'm avoiding your question, but I'm not. This day, the eighth day, Yom HaShemini, is mentioned real time in three different books in the Chumash. It's the only day that I know of that is such a long day. It starts at the end of Shemot, and the date is given, Rosh Chodesh, of the first day, first month, second year, is mentioned at the very end, and that's the day that the Mishkan is consecrated, and the date is given. Vayi b'yom hashmini, Rashi tells us, that's the same date. Later on, in Sefer Bamidbar, the same date is given again, and we're told that that's the day, the first day of the 12 days of the sanctuary. And again, the date is given. On the second year, first month, first day. It's the same day as the end of Shemot. This is a really long day because it's mentioned at the end of Shemot. It's mentioned in the beginning of Bamidbar, and it's mentioned over here. All of them, not like Matan Torah is mentioned various times in retrospective, on that day. It's mentioned in real time in three different books. So realize right away that, first of all, that's interesting. Second of all, that's problematic. Okay. Third of all, if my editor would call and say, listen, you have to tighten this up a little bit, right? This is not a great way of writing, and you need to tighten it up. The candidate to get rid of is obviously this one. If we would have taken away the story of Nadav and Avihu and taken it out of Parshat Shemini, and for that matter, out of Sefer Vayikra, no one would have noticed. If we took the story and we put it in Bamidbar, no one would have noticed. Now, this is a much better question than you think. Because if you go through all of Sefer Vayikra, there's only two pieces of narrative, this one and the Mekalel. The Mekalel is given no date, and over here, by this one, we do have a date. So obviously the question is, I have a boring book, it's all of Vayikra. If I want to make it exciting, then put 30 stories into it. No, it's not a book of narrative, it's a book of law. It's not even a book of law, it's a book of holiness. So that's really what the book is about, it's a book of holiness. So now I have to ask myself a question. So why was this narrative put here when I could have put it in two different places? I could have put it in Shemot, I could have put it in Bamidbar. And I'll say it again. If it were not here, incidentally, it's not just the story. If all of Vayikra weren't here, if we went straight from Shemot to Bamidbar, you also wouldn't have noticed that anything was missing because that's where the story continues. So over here, I have really, by Nadav and Avihu, I have a story which is a total outlier in terms of the book of Vayikra. It gives me a date, it gives me a place, it gives me a date, it gives me a narrative which just shouldn't be there. Now, obviously, after everything I just now said, see, it won't actually take me 20 minutes. Obviously, yes, what's obvious, that this story is necessary in terms of this particular book, and this particular book is a book about, I gave you the hint before, it's a book about holiness. So it's not just one of the stories which are thrown in. Incidentally, you now realize the story of the Makalel is also about holiness, but that's, we don't have to deal with that today. That'll be your homework to think about it, why that also deserves to be in this book. That means that part of the existence of holiness is going to be the ramifications of holiness. And the ramifications of holiness, I can now restate this Rashi and say it a little bit differently, and say not that someone has to be sacrificed in terms of on the Mishkan, on the Mizbeach, off the Mizbeach, but I can say is that the price to pay for something which is incredibly holy is that it's going to be so easy for someone. Now, I could say make a mistake, but I'm not sure if I want to say that. But in order for everyone to realize what this tool is, what this thing is, and what, this is a high-stakes building. This is a high-stakes concept, and therefore be very, very careful. And that may be very well what Moshe is saying. I always knew that when it came to the Mishkan, that it's in order for people to really internalize what this is and what this can do, what holiness is like a burning fire that can come and can swallow somebody up. So let's leave it at that. Yeah. I don't hear any echoes of Rabbi Soloveitchik there, do I? Ah, the phrase is... Yes, it sounded somewhat familiar. Okay, so let's start all over again. That's really interesting, because you know, let's just think all over again. Nadav and Avihu, here, read source number 3. V'yikach Aaron et Elisheva, bat Aminadav, achot Nachshon, lo le'isha, v'teled lo et Nadav et Avihu, et Elazar v'et Itamar. So, yes. Did you all notice the way that I read that? V'teled lo et Nadav v'et Avihu, et Elazar v'et Itamar. So, if I would have thrown in et Nadav et Avihu ve et Elazar ve et Itamar, or et Nadav. Actually, you could have said Nadav Avihu Elazar Itamar. I mean, I could have said it like that as well. Now, I'm not going to make any broad conclusions from this, because I think one will have to look at every single time there's a list of people in a pasuk and see how it's constructed. So I did not do that in preparing for this. I just noticed this and I decided I can make something up. Like, so for example, what if, and I searched, I didn't find anybody who said this. What if Nadav and Avihu were twins? Et Nadav Avihu. So therefore they're together, they're a pair. I mean, they are a pair even if they're not twins, you realize that. But there's also something which is very interesting over here. Here again is the first day. We have something all the way back in the first brothers who brought offerings were Cain and Hevel. Wow, look at that. Somebody also died that day. See how similar that is? No, it's actually a little different, and the difference is striking, is that those are two brothers who found themselves in competition. By the way, one of the Midrashim there says, what was the competition? That Cain was born with a twin sister, but Hevel was born with two twin sisters. And Cain says, I'm the firstborn. Why in the world do you have two? See, it always comes down, they're fighting over women. That's what the Midrash says, which is quite interesting in terms of their not getting married over here. But the other thing which is interesting, especially in a post-Bereshit perspective, and that is how many brothers did not get along in Bereshit, well, from the very first ones to all the way, you know, just about to the end. And over here, they competed in terms of the offering. How interesting it is that Nadav and Avihu do this together, that there's unity in this, that they are like one, they live like one, and then they die like one, which is obviously very disturbing for us. But that nonetheless is interesting. The other thing that perhaps we should note, so again, on the one hand, in terms of seeing that something may not be wrong with them, is this constant Lifnei Hashem, which is the retrospective. So the Torah does not clearly tell us, in terms of making a value judgment, what it was that they did which was wrong. It tells us what they did, but it didn't make the value judgment of saying what it is that they did which was wrong. And as I said, I could make the argument that quite the opposite is true, that what they did later on becomes the service in on Yom Kippur in the Holy of Holies, and that's what Aaron's being asked to do. Of course, you can tell me that the whole difference is going to come down to that here God commanded or there God didn't command it. See, there's another thought which may disturb you also. And that thought is, what if they never did anything wrong? What if they were completely innocent? What if, for example, what if you're not gonna let me say it, are you? What if their deaths, that's what I'm trying to decide which source I'm in. What if their deaths is punishment to Aaron for the Chet Egel? Aaron brings the sin offering, and he brings the Egel, and God says, I accept it, you're forgiven, but there's a price you're going to pay. I know you don't like it. You don't get the choice. I get to say what I want. Next year, when you have your class, and you get to say what you want. Look at source number 9. We don't know their ages, by the way, which is also part of the issue. We don't know how old they are. Source number 9, this is not the only one that says it. Source number 9, Sefer Ohev Chesed. So I was a little, maybe you can say this is deliberate. This is a Hasidic work, so now you can not like this. Rav David min Nadvorna, V'neyadua shemitat nadav avihu b'cheta egel. Because it's well known that that's why they died. So if it wasn't well known before, I just now said it, so now it's well known. But he sees that as something very obvious. So what I want to do in the time that we have, how much do we have? We have a little time. I want to do is to go back and to find where we find Nadav and Avihu prior to this, because maybe there's a backstory. And we mentioned it in passing quickly before, but I do want to note something. In source number 3 is where they're born, and there we noted it's Nadav and Avihu, that they are a team. Source number 3. And source number 4 is Perikav Dalet. Perikav Dalet is the second description of Matan Torah. The first description was in Perik Yutet, is in Parsha Yitro. This is the end of Parsha Mishpatim. Ve'el Moshe Amar, Alei El Hashem. Now, notice Pasuk Aleph from the very beginning of that parak. Ve'el Moshe Amar, Alei El Hashem, Atah Va'aron, Nadav Avihu, Shivim Mizikne Yisrael. Aaron has 4 children. Nadav and Avihu are being placed on a pedestal separate from the others. If you go back for a moment back into source number 2, there you have that Vayihi B'yom HaShemini Kara Moshe La'aron U'Levanav. It doesn't say which ones, right? And then we have in Pasuk Ted, Vayikriv B'nei Aharon Et Adam. They're involved in doing the service, which means they are part of the service there. And then Pasuk Yud says, Kasher Tziva Hashem Amosh. They did everything in the proper way. Continue, Vayishchad Atola Aaron in Pasuk Yud Bet. He does the Shchitab. And then Vayimtziu B'nei Aaron Et Adam. And then they go and they continue doing some of the service. The same thing is found in Pasuk Yud Chet. Aaron does the Shchita. Vayimtziu B'nei Aaron Et Adam. And B'nei Aaron are involved. And at the end in Pasuk Kaf, it says, and everything was done Kasher Tziva Moshe. Everything was done in the proper way. It was done as Moshe had told them to do it. But you do see the combination over here is Aaron Uvanav. Aaron Uvanav. But what you don't see is that Nadav and Avihu are separate from the Banav. On the other hand, look at Perek Kaf Dalet again now. Over here, it's Ve'el Moshe Amar Lei El Hashem Atah Va'aron V'Nadav Avihu V'Shivim Mizikne Yisrael. So what's interesting, I think it's very obvious what's interesting is that over here, Nadav and Avihu are separated from the others. And if you, and I agree 100%, point out that the common denominator and the things that were said about them was some kind of arrogance, and then you have to ask, well, where did that arrogance come from? Again, if that's correct, well, you see that they're being separated. There are 4 B'nai Aaron, and only 2 of them are being separated or being called upon. Unless you're going to tell me that it was only Nadav and Avihu in Perek Tet that we just know, but it didn't say that. It said B'nai Aaron. Aaron has 4 children, so therefore I assume it's all 4. So, we assume that they're the oldest, and we don't know the age. We don't know the age gap, so let's continue. Let's continue in source number 4. Yes. Let's read source 4 now. In source 4, Ve'el Moshe Amar, right? Aaron and Nadav and Avihu, right? Continue. In Pasuk Tet, Vaya'al Moshe v'Aaron, Nadav Aviyu, v'shiv mizignei Yisrael. So again, you see that they have this special role. It's Moshe and Aaron, Nadav and Aviyu. Meaning that Gemara that we read before, Moshe and Aaron, Nadav and Aviyu, Ziknei Yisrael, so now you realize where that actually takes place. That was a description of what takes place by Matan Torah. Pasuk Yud. Vayir'u et Elohei Yisrael. Who is that referring to? Now, the problem is that we had in Pasuk Tet, we'll just read Yud after Tet, and read it as one now. Vayal Moshe v'Aaron, Nadav Aviyu, v'shivim izikne Yisrael, vayir'u et Elohei Yisrael, v'tachat raglav, kemaseh levnat asapir, uke'etzem ha'shemayim l'tohar. Those of you who don't know what this means, remarkably, I tried to explain this a couple of months ago, correct? Correct. So they see this type of a revelation. And then Pasuk Yud Aleph, ve'el atzilei b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado. Now, what does the word atzilei mean? It means the noble ones. To the noble ones of Israel, lo shalach yado, God did not strike them down. Ve'yachazu et ha'elokim ve'yachlu v'yishtu. They looked at God, and they ate and they drank. So, while Pasuk Tet identified 1, 2, 3, 4 people and a group, and then Pasuk Yud describes something, Pasuk Yud Aleph describes a possible response of God, and this is what we saw in the Midrash, which is quoted by the commentaries. He did not strike down the noble ones, even though he could have. Now, here's our question. What did they do wrong? Who are these noble ones? Is it Moshe and Aaron, or is it, and that this is where our problem begins. And they eat and they drink. See, this is what the Midrash had told us before. Moshe, when he gets by the snare, he covers his eyes, refuses to look. The other thing which we need to pay attention to is by the Chet HaEgel, we had some very similar description. By the Chet HaEgel, we have them pointing at it and saying, Elu Elach Yisrael, this is your God. And what does it say about the people did? Achlu v'shatu v'kamu l'tzachek. Which means that, is there some kind of a connection between the achlu v'shatu, which is over here, and the achlu v'shatu, which takes place by the Chet HaEgel? Is there some kind of a background to that sin of a desire of having some type of, again, I don't know what word to use over here, but it's more of a hedonistic, orgiastic food, drink, party experience instead of what could have been Matan Torah. And again, I go back to that Midrash. Moshe hides his face, right? You know, you think about the moment of the Kohanim, because that happens in this week's Parsha, bless the people, so you have a lot of the men pulling the talit over the heads. You see a lot of the women holding up the sidur in order to, I don't know if you ever look in the women's section. Yes? Any of the women do that or no? Yes? You look? Okay. Anyway, that's because of your shul. The women are in the men's section there. So... there is this, you know, distance that we, even when holiness is very close, there is this distance, which probably goes back to this whole issue. You have Nadav and Avihu in terms of Perek Yud and Vayikra, in terms of when they die. This is a Lefnei Hashem, an approaching Hashem. There's this rumor that we heard that they even drink when they go in, which, as I said, we can debate. But what you can't debate is that there's somebody eating and drinking back over here. And then, of course, you have to ask yourself, is the eating and drinking over here somehow a prelude to the drinking which they're accused of over there? Which means that was that drinking there. And you saw, I quickly shot it down, just telling you that there's an alternative way of reading it. On the other hand, that was not all the evidence. There was another piece of evidence over here, and that is that there's eating and drinking taking place right over here during Matan Torah. But it's more than that. There's an ominous statement, and what does the ominous statement say? The ominous statement was, "Vil atzilei b'nei Yisrael," to the noble ones, the princes. Who were the princes? Lo shalach yado. God did not strike them down. V'yechazu et Elokim, v'yechlu v'yishtu. And they approach the divine, but they approach the divine through eating and drinking. And that seems to be the problem. Now, notice what happens afterwards. And this I didn't see anyone point out, but I think this is quite important. Vayomer Shema Moshe alei al ahara. Now Moshe is told, come up and you're going to be there. Vayakam Moshe, look at the Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayakam Moshe v'Yeshua misharato. And now another person who was not mentioned before, Moshe goes up with Yeshua. Now, why is Yeshua there? Okay, because you say, because it's misharato. So, okay, that makes sense. Vayal Moshe el har Elokim, ve'el zakenim amar, shuvu lanu bazeh ad asher nashuv aleichem. And to the elders, he says, you guys wait around. Vinei Aaron v'chur, imachem, and Aaron v'chur are in charge. And you continue looking over here, and you're asking, so what happened to those other people? Umara kvod Hashem kasheruch, and there is this visual appearance of God, and then there are two people that disappeared. And the two people that disappeared, Nadu and Avihu. Now, I'm not going to tell you some kind of crazy conspiracy theory. They already died right now. No. But they sort of, I think, lost their stature right here. That it wasn't just that God says, you know, he doesn't strike them, but they disappear from there. Now, you could counter and tell me, well, it wasn't important any longer, but why was everyone else involved? It is important, which means, and this is always the harder thing to do, right? This is why you pay me a lot of money, is to notice what's not there. Because sometimes what's not there speaks volumes. And over here, what's not here is Nadav and Avihu. But they were so important before. That's exactly the point. They were so important in the beginning of this. It's Aaron and Nadav and Avihu, and then the Zakenim, and suddenly they're not there anymore. And if somebody needs, it's Moshe who now gets Yoshua, but what happens to Nadav and Avihu? And I sense that there is some kind of significance over here, which means, despite everything that I said before, I now actually can go in two different ways, and I want it to be very, very clear. One way that I can go is based upon their behavior and exclusively their behavior, and that is that whatever eating and drinking took place right here somehow then takes place afterwards, and that's what takes place by drinking, even though there was no direct evidence, but it was implied, and therefore they do the same thing again, and they think this is the way to approach something which is holy, and clearly there's going to be a lot more to talk about, which we're not going to talk about in terms of why and what they were trying to do. There are sources, for example, Rev Elyashiv's grandfather's name was Rev Elyashiv, and which is why he was his grandfather, which, by the way, is not as simple as you think, because actually Rav Elyashiv's father was a son-in-law of his grandfather, and he took the father, and he took the father-in-law's name. He took his wife's name. There you go. And why? Because that was Rav Elyashiv. Anyway, Rav Elyashiv's grandfather was the greatest Kabbalist of the 20th century, and he was Rav Kook's teacher in Kabbalah, among many other people. And he wrote a sefer which is called the Leshem. In the Leshem, he talks about why they took this wine, which is based upon a passage in the Zohar, that they were trying to fix the sin of Adam in the Garden of Eden and to take this wine and to try to create a tikkun. And he has a whole discussion on that. So therefore, if you realize the dawn of creation, according to the Zohar, the sin takes place by eating and by drinking, and it was done in rebellion against God, now you take eating and drinking, and by the way, the Ketoret is also quite interesting, because again, to remind you of this idea, according to the Bnei Yisaschar, the sense of smell was the only sense that was not corrupted in the Garden of Eden. It says they listened to the words of the Nachash, she sees the tree, touches the fruit, eats it, and the only thing that was not mentioned in the narrative is the sense of smell. So it's very interesting that what they do is they may drink, which goes back to the sin in the Garden of Eden, but then take the one place that was not corrupted and take the Ketoret and take the sense of smell and try to approach God with these two elements and try to fix the sin of... So I'm saying, that I don't recall the Leshem went that, you know, said exactly the way that I said it, but I'm taking his thought that that's what's trying to take it, but it's dangerous. This is the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. There are serpents around. It's dangerous, according to the Zohar. This is exactly what Noah tried to do after the flood. Let's try to fix the world. It's what Lot tried to do after he saw destruction. Let's try to fix the world. But it ends up being that the wine is not all that easy in order to control, and it can bring to terrible things. So one way that I can read this is to say, no, they're great tzaddikim, and they're trying to fix the world. They're trying to do a tikkun, and maybe that goes back to Rashi and what Moshe is saying, that you know the world is so close to being fixed right now. We have a Mishkan. We never had this before. Right, the Kruvim are mentioned right there in the Garden of Eden story, correct? The word Vayashkon is mentioned there. Mishkan is mentioned over there. Now we finally have a Mishkan. Let's fix the whole world. Well, that's not so easy. That could be dangerous. So I think take Nadav and Avihu as being unbelievable tzaddikim who are trying to just go further. And what's so bad about doing something that God didn't command? What is, I mean this with sincerity. Let's just say my wife asked me to buy flowers, and for some remarkable reason, I listened to her. Right, I try not to buy flowers. mean, last time I bought flowers, not last time, it's not true. I buy these flowers in Machane Yehuda. They're beautiful. They're totally beautiful. I don't remember if it was a birthday or what. And all the women are looking at the flowers. And half of them are looking and saying, wow, what a great husband that must be. And the other half are looking and saying, I wonder what he did. Right? So you should never buy flowers. It brings to bad thoughts. But what if she asked me to buy flowers and I buy flowers? That's very nice. But what happens if she didn't ask me and on a Tuesday morning I see, it's not Shabbos, it's not anything, and I see beautiful flowers and I bring home these flowers, random acts of kindness, and I go and I do something I was not commanded to do. Is that terrible? Oh, it's not terrible. It's not terrible. But it's interesting. By the way, you know what's really interesting? And I'm going to end with this. When the Gemara speaks about random acts of, no, actually not. When the Gemara speaks about a mitzvah d'rabbanon, and it talks about an act of love, it quotes a pasuk from Shir Hashirim, and it talks about how certain parts of you are as beautiful as wine. And it uses the word wine in that context of a mitzvah d'rabbanon, of doing something which God had never commanded. So maybe Nadav Navi, who have this sense of doing something which is very, very holy. On the other hand, and this is the bad part, we don't want to end on the bad part, maybe the Achlu V'Shatu over here does have an echo later on in the Egel, and therefore this punishment will take place, and therefore Aaron is being punished and losing these kids, and he has nothing left to say over here, and maybe that's how to read it. But of all of the commentaries, I prefer to see them as tzaddikim and not to see them as rishayim, and I prefer to save the reputation of Nadav Navihu, and rather than say that these were terrible, terrible people.